Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. It's cold, it's raining, what's new? Actually, it's UK Pro League Finals Week. That is what is new. Up and running at Nottingham Tennis Centre, and former Australian Open semi-finalist Kyle Edmund is using it to launch his latest comeback. And you can still get tickets to watch courtside. So if that is of interest, head to ukproleague.com to find out more. We will be throwing it forward to that tournament in a few minutes. But firstly, a few words for last week's action on the LTA British Tour. That will be the main theme, if you like, of this week's podcast. Welcome back. And in a few words, the British Tour events are competitive match play opportunities for players based in the UK. They span across the length of the season, and these events range from entry level right up to tournaments that feature ATP and WTA ranked competitors. Those top tier events are called Premier Tier tournaments, and there are several scheduled across the season. And last week was the final premier event of 2022. It took place on the indoor hard courts at Edgbaston and Priory Club in Birmingham, and there was extra motivation for playing this particular event because if you win a premier event, you automatically get a wild card into the LTA British Tour Masters, which is the grand finale of the season and takes place next month in Loughborough. The men's event in Edgbaston was won by 23-year-old Michael Shaw in emphatic fashion. It was 6-love, 6-2 over promising 18-year-old Louis Bowden. Shaw can hit with some serious firepower, and I think there was probably added motivation to start this particular match quickly because there were no ball changes at the event. So the longer they played, the more fluffed up the balls were going to get, and Shaw was drilling it from the offset to maximise his ability to hit through the court behind both serve and return, and he got the job done fairly quickly. He graduated from Loughborough University this season, Shaw, and has shown good progress lately across the UK Pro League and other tournaments in the UK. And after the win in Edgbaston on Friday, he gave some credit to the increased competitions calendar in Great Britain this season.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've really enjoyed just being able to focus solely on my tennis. I've missed the sort of team events. I'm looking forward to County Cup, but I'm lucky that I'm so able to train at Loughborough and be involved. And it's been tough, but the great thing is that there's a lot of tournaments in Britain now, which makes a huge difference. And being able to play 25k sort of regularly throughout the year, and then these British Tour events with good money, like suddenly you can build a calendar around that quite quickly and quite easily. So that makes a massive difference.
So that was Shaw cementing his spot at the Masters next month, but the biggest news was arguably on the women's side, where 13-year-old Hannah Klugman covered the court with her usual pace and got on top of it with some regularity for a 6-4, 6-2 defeat of top seed and WTA world number 728 Alice Gillen. And 24-year-old Gillen was and is admittedly tired at the end of a long season, but still a huge win for Klugman, who carried herself with real maturity, and that was something that she reflected on herself post-match.
What are the biggest changes that you've seen throughout the year? What are you most pleased with in terms of your overall development, do you think?
I think I've started to mature more, like on court, just trying to be more calm on court, and starting to take the balls on more before, yeah.
And looking forward to the future, it's been a big year for you. What are your goals for the near future? What do you think?
Close goals, or
let's say close goals.
Probably I really want to get into a Grand Slam by myself, a junior Grand Slam. Just keep working hard, and yeah, hopefully I'll get there.
Klugman is continuing to make her mark in 2022 then. It's her first season on the ITF Junior Circuit, and she got off to a lightning start by winning her first two titles back-to-back in Loughborough at the beginning of the season. Junior events are all graded, with the top grades being Grade A and continuing down to J1, J2, J3, J4 and J5. Those particular Loughborough tournaments that Klugman won were J3s, and by winning them she became the youngest Brit ever to win a tournament at that level or above. She also contested Junior Wimbledon for the first time this season, and this is literally only the beginning for her. There's so much potential, even across the course of this year. She's developed so much. She contested the final of the 16 and unders event at the Junior National Tennis Championships, and to put that into perspective, she could still have played the 14 and unders event if she had wanted to. So much, much more to come from her. And the LTA British Tour was the beginning for another player who you are going to hear from now. You might have been following 25-year-old Freya Christie for some time, or you might have heard of her when she broke out on tour as a teenager and represented GB at the Billie Jean King Cup alongside some fairly big British tennis names. If the latter is the case for you, you might have been wondering where she's been since, and Freya will fill you in on all of that over the course of the next half hour, and why she feels optimistic heading into 2023. We look back on her whole career, from how she started to the challenges that various people in her life facing cancer has laid across her path, to that breakthrough time period of 2015 and 2016, and various high notes from the past season, like breaking the top 200 in doubles for the first time and going toe-to-toe with a top 50 singles player earlier this month. My apologies in advance for the increase in background noise as the chat continues. We decided to chance it on one of the indoor balconies at the tennis centre, and a kids session started up below us about 10 minutes in, but it did sound like they were having a good time, and I think we had a good time too. So here is Freya Christie, currently in Nottingham at Nottingham Tennis Centre, so it only makes sense that I'm talking to Freya Christie. Freya, how are you?
I'm really good, thank you.
If you'd have lost that match earlier, would you have been as good right now?
Definitely not. It would be a little bit of a different tone in my voice, that is for sure.
But a nice turnaround there. It's the beginning of UK Pro League finals week, at which last year Freya came runner-up, so you don't defend points, do you? It's not like your average tournament, or there might be a bit more pressure, but you've got the home advantage, which is lovely stuff. And something that you're also familiar with, Freya, and I'm going to jump here to begin with rather than starting at square one in terms of your tennis journey, but the LTA British Tour is something that I'll have been talking about on the intro of this podcast, and I know that's something that you've been very familiar with over the past few years. So I just wanted to ask a little bit about your experiences playing that and the part that it's played in your development, your progression, your career over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, the British Tour for me, they've been really valuable, I have to say. You know, coming up from being probably, I don't know, 13, 14 when I probably played my first one, and I can actually remember playing Naomi Brody on court one over there in one of my first British tours in the semi-finals, and that was just, I mean, just have experience like that, I mean, it's really good. I think they're such valuable tournaments, and I mean, I'm still playing them now. You know, I played a premier event this year on the grass, and I mean, I have to say that was in Felixstowe. And, you know, getting 4 or 5 matches on the grass before the start of the grass season was, I mean, it's unbelievable. So, I mean, it really has been, for many different reasons, a really big part of my career, I'd have to say, yeah.
Was that a big stepping stone at the beginning of your career? Like, for example, how do you even go about starting the pro career as a youngster? Is that one of the first options for you in terms of getting competition against a level of player that you wouldn't have encountered before?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, from a mix of playing kind of junior events and then playing those experienced women's players, you know, it's a different ball coming towards you, it's a different sort of mentality on the court, and I think it's, I mean, it's so valuable, definitely, to play a mix of, you know, variety of players, from being a junior, coming out of playing 14, 16s kind of events, to then get a mix of playing a ladies open event. Like, it's huge. It really is good. And I think especially, you know, for younger players, I think they can definitely capitalize on using the British Tour, because I've always been a big advocate for the British Tour. They've helped me so much playing those events, and still now I'm still playing them, so I really can't fault them.
Yeah, of course, because there are different levels. So for the younger players, but slightly older as well, you mentioned that you won Felixstowe this year.
Yeah,
do you know who won Felixstowe last year?
I don't know.
She knows that there's a reason for me asking.
I know. I'm pretty sure.
I'm almost doubting myself now, but I'm pretty sure it was Emma Raducanu.
Oh, really? Okay.
So
okay.
I was just curious as to whether you knew that. And
I
obviously,
didn't.
Oh, you know Emma well. Mm-hmm. You've been in the same circles as her. You saw what she did last year at the US Open. We've all heard untold amounts about it in the aftermath. Mm-hmm. But what was that like for you, seeing someone that you'd been competing with, in circles with, then going on to accomplish something so extraordinary? Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing what she did. And I think it's amazing what she's done for British tennis. I mean, coming through and winning the US Open, and even, you know, her results after that. I mean, to still be where she is now, I think it's incredible. And I think it's been such a kind of uplifting view for a lot of British players. I think especially, I mean, going down to grassroots tennis and seeing how many people are picking up a racket because they can see Emma Raducanu who's won the US Open. I mean, it's great to see. And also, you know, up to kind of us kind of British women's players, I think you can see that a lot of the girls now are, you know, they're pushing each other, and it's great to see because everyone's doing so well. And it's almost kind of been a kickstart slash a bit of a push to for all of us to kind of get our rankings up, and I think it's really good to see.
Yeah, there's definitely been a wave. So Emma won Felix though. You won Felix. Emma reached final of the UK Pro League 2020 of the finals week. Mm-hmm. You did that last year.
I did.
Emma also won the British Tour Masters in 2020. And I know that you're playing the British Tour Masters this year. So I'm not saying anything in particular there. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
But okay, so that's British Tour. Mm-hmm. We're at Nottingham Tennis Centre. This is where it started for you, Freya, I believe. And this is quite funny because obviously I'm kind of part of the tennis world now, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's funny to say, but you were one of the few players that I actually remember the first time I heard about you.
Yeah.
And it was on the BBC website, and there was a feature on you, won Wimbledon, how you apparently got dropped off at Nottingham Tennis Centre when your mum was on the way to a gym class or something. Can you tell us that story?
So literally I was, you know, at school, normal kind of, you know, normal activities. I did ballet and tap after school, if you can believe it or not, because I'm not very into that at all. But I just hated it, and I just said, look, mum, I just want to do something different after school. And there was leaflets given out into our school for a mini tennis session at the Nottingham Tennis Centre, and and that's just how I kind of started, really. Just came into the one of the sessions here, and I just really liked it from the start. I mean, it was much better than ballet and tap, I have to say. And they just thought I was very coordinated from the first session. And I think from then, I just got introduced into kind of squads and evening squads, and kind of, yeah, it just all happened from there, really.
Nice. So you were the youngest of four children, the youngest of four children, mm-hmm. three older brothers.
Yeah, it's tough out here.
It is indeed. Did that have any impact in terms of, were they sporty? Did you like to do the kinds of things they were doing? What was the situation there growing up?
I'd definitely say there was a lot of football influence in our family. No one was really playing tennis, so I was the first one that kind of picked up a racket. My eldest brother played football, and then the second youngest to me played football as well. The middle one was a bit more kind of, he did a little bit of football but was kind of the academic one of the family. It was good, because definitely as I was growing up, I definitely had, you know, my older brothers, they would play tennis with me on the weekends as well, and you know, it was kind of a point, they would always beat me, and then actually it got to a turning point where I started to actually beat them, which was quite good, and could definitely see the improvements. But yeah, I couldn't thank them enough for that, because it definitely, you know, we kind of, I remember in the summers we got made a makeshift kind of tennis court in the back garden, you know, got mum's kind of what do you call it, that
like
you hang
washing
your,
line.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The washing line, and would be playing tennis and playing mini tennis in the back garden. So and then it was a mix of, we'd do a bit of that, and then it would be a bit of football as well. So not that I'm any good at football, but you know, it was quite a sporty family. Yeah,
we can't do everything. Do you remember the first time you beat one of your brothers at tennis?
I do, yeah. And they tried to say I cheated, which I didn't. So yeah, it was just a classic sibling bickering. But I do remember it, and it was a bit like, I mean, not a career moment, but I mean, it was unbelievable, you know, it was just to see the improvements being that young and stuff. So yeah.
Do you remember a moment where you decided that this is what I want to do, I want to go professional, this is, because it's one thing picking up a racket for the first time and enjoying it's another deciding that this is what I want to be my career. So do you remember that moment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't particularly remember a moment for me. I know it's always been a consideration for a lot of players, like, do I go and play college, do I go pro? I think I probably made that choice quite early. I was always kind of, you know, I played in kind of the tennis Europe's 14, 16s, that sort of thing, and was fortunate enough to get selected to play kind of Winter Cup, Summer Cup. So, and I think I just kind of knew from playing those events and being around probably the best juniors in the world that, you know, I wanted to do this basically. And even playing, I was lucky enough to play all of the junior slams as well. So I kind of got in off my own ranking, you know, into Aussie Open, qualified for US Open juniors. And I just think, I just made that decision quite young, and, it's not something I regret. It's definitely something that I was very happy that I chose. But I know that also, you know, the college pathway is always also a very good option as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, you got started early. And I'm going to touch on that, but just because of timings, there's something I want to touch on at this point. We were talking before we went on the mic. And actually, I was talking on the previous podcast, and Liz Barnett was on the podcast, talking about how many players there are in British circles, in their 20s particularly, that have lost either a parent or both parents. And I know that you're one of those players. And you lost your dad at quite a young age. So in terms of the tennis, well, in terms of you as well, but I know that channels into the tennis, how did that affect you and your career path? What were the impacts that had?
I mean it's a pivotal moment in anyone's life for something like that to happen. And you know, I was very young. I was 11, 12 years old, and I was actually away at a tournament when it happened as well. Which,
oh wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's one of those things. And I think, you know, as kind of Lissy Barnett brought up, like a lot of players, it's happened to. And I think it is, like, it's tough because it is, you know, he was one of the main people as well. You know, he would take me on a tennis court when on the weekend, and we would go and play, and you know, we would be on a park court, and he'd be like feeding me balls. Like, he was a big part of my tennis kind of journey when I was really, really young. So it is kind of like, I mean, the initial shock, and I think it's still, you know, it's on, as kind of, I think Lissy Barnett brought up as well, like every day it's kind of on my mind. And but again, I think it's just, it's one of those things in life where it kind of makes you tougher. So I think when you do kind of have, you know, the lows or the highs, it's definitely something you think about. And I think my family, that, I mean, they're such a good family, like we're very a tight-knit sort of thing, and we all you know, can bounce from each other. And I think to have that, you know, we kind of don't look at it as a bad thing. We kind of look at it as, you know, kind of like a positive, and the positive things from having him as my dad. And yeah, I mean, it's also from another aspect, it was also because of cancer. So I think I always try to raise awareness for that when I can as well. My boyfriend also had cancer a few years ago, which, I mean, he had a very rare cancer that he was able to actually come through, and he's been remission for a year now. But again, like, that is just another, I think if we can raise awareness for that, it, you know, it might help someone out later in the future. But again, I think it's bringing it back to tennis. It is one of those things where I think it does just toughen you up. And I think, you know, when you have bad days or you lose a tennis match, I think, you know, it almost brings you back to reality sometimes, because you're like, you know, you can't take life for granted. So you know, losing a tennis match is minuscule compared to life. So I think it does bring a bit of reality back into, you know, this amazing tennis life we play. So yeah,
It's amazing your family could keep around each other and generate that positive mindset in the face of something so tough. And that was something that Liz mentioned a lot, the perspective and being able to take things in stride. Another thing that I would ask regarding that is, did you take any time for that at the time? Did you take a bit of time off the court, or did you find it as a little bit of a sanctuary?
It was almost definitely like I had kind of, you know, I want to say a week or two off, but after that, to be honest, I was straight back on the court because it was almost something to take my mind off things, and it was something I had to focus on rather than thinking about, you know, what had happened. So definitely it did, tennis almost did kind of save me in that aspect as well, because it is something I can always like relate to in moments of, you know, bad times. I mean, I remember the moment as well when my boyfriend got diagnosed with cancer. I was literally playing the National Club League finals in Bournemouth a few years ago. And I just remember it happened on the first day I found out. And I was just literally, I mean, I was crying in the car park and I didn't know what to do. And I was lost. But in that moment, I actually, you know, I said to him, you know, I'm going to come back home right now, like, you know, support you and stuff like that. And he said, no, like, I just want you to go and play. Like, I just want you to go and play the weekend, do what, you know, do what I do best, playing tennis, and then come back and you know, see what's what, and then you can support me then. So I think it's, you know, tennis is always something I can revert back to, for sure.
For sure. That's so good from Jack's side of things.
Definitely, and, definitely. He's a good one.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fitting that we're talking about getting started and younger players, because I think we've got a few down to our right here, which you might pick up a little bit of that on the background. So that was that period of your life and career. And then you moved on and you had success on the main tour pretty early.
Yeah.
So your career high ranking is inside the top 300. You achieved that in your teens, I think, if I remember correctly.
I think it was coming out of my last year of juniors. I think I hit my career high 278, if I've got that right.
I've looked at it enough times, preparation for commentary and all of that, so I think you're pretty accurate there. But were you surprised at how quickly that happened?
Yeah, I think definitely being kind of a junior, playing my last year in juniors, and I kind of mixed in the 25Ks and that sort of events, and back then there were 10Ks as well. So and yeah, I think I just really surprised myself. And I think at that moment as well, being that young, it was almost kind of like there's absolutely no pressure. And I think that's probably, you know, I think when you see a lot of the up and coming juniors now, I mean, it's, you can just see how they play. You know, they play very fearlessly. And I think that was probably something that I definitely did when I reached that career high, and I was just taking everything in my stride. And I think it was probably, you know, I hadn't played a full year on tour yet, so I didn't kind of know what was what yet, but I was just taking it, I was playing well, and it was definitely a good time. And unfortunately I got a little bit hampered with a wrist injury where I had to take some time out after that career high, but we're working to get back up there.
Absolutely. And it's interesting what you say, and it's interesting that we mentioned Emma Raducanu before, because it's a similar situation for her, that she came through so quickly.
Yes, yeah.
So she didn't have that tour experience, and obviously she's had a little few physical niggles as well, which makes backing up hard. Looking back, do you think it was too much too soon in terms of what you achieved?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't take it back if I could. I mean, it was an unbelievable start to my career. You know, I was, you know, just coming out of juniors and, you know, reaching top 300 in the world. It was almost a bit too plain sailing. I mean, something had to happen. But yeah, I think just to show myself, looking back now, you know, I have definitely a good level of tennis in me. And, you know, if reaching it at that young age, you know, there's no reason why I can't, you know, get there and go better than then. So, yeah.
That's a great mindset to have. And Yeah, it's interesting because I'm sat here with you. You're the same age as me. We're both, I like to say, we're both still young. And yet you've been around for such a long length of time. And it was that year, I think it was 2016, where you had so many great experiences. Mm-hmm. You were on the Billie Jean King Cup team for Great Britain for the first time. You got to play these WTA events, made your WTA debut, finals of ITFs. That meant that you were kind of mixing with a certain group of players. I know you're very good friends with Katie Bolter, and you have good friends of that kind of ranking. How has that been for you? Because obviously you've spent a lot of time on the ITF circuit, and these girls have been playing WTA events and stuff, so you're not always in the same circles. There's not the opportunity to travel together and things like that.
Yeah.
Is that tough for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one great thing that, you know, British tennis that we have the grass season. So being able to kind of mix in with those higher events, you know, you've got an ITF, you know, 100,000 events, and you've got the WTA events on as well. So I think that's definitely a place where we can kind of mix in and see that different level. And I think it's also good because, you know, speaking to, you know, for example, you know, Katie Bolter, Jodie Burridge, they're some of my closest friends, and they, you know, I train with them a lot in NTC as well. And I think it just, you know, it can show that I, you know, everyone can play that sort of level, and, you know, it doesn't matter. And maybe people's kind of can peak at different times. And as you said, like, I was really young, and that was when I hit my first peak, but there's no reason, you know, why I can't get there again. And I think from seeing like the higher level ITF events and, you know, the WTAs, I can kind of see that. So yeah, it's good to see.
A lot of door banging and a lot of encouraging things for you, I think, in recent times. You've had a really good streak on the doubles court this year with Ali Collins, four titles, guys, and counting. But also on the singles court, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. But I wonder, between now and that time that we were talking about where you broke out, was there any period of time that was particularly tough that kind of had you on the edge? Because I know it's such a lonely sport, and there are always going to be times where you have that internal self-doubt.
Definitely. I mean, I have to say that kind of the COVID year and coming out of that and going when, you know, competitions did open up again, it was really difficult, actually. You know, you would think it was, you know, obviously we were grateful to be able to, you know, travel again and be able to play tennis. I mean, we're very fortunate to do that. But it was very lonely at the time. Like, there was a lot of kind of bubbles and isolation periods, and I think there were also the tournaments were very blocked off, so there was no, it was almost kind of, you know, it, as you said, it was very lonely. And I think that was definitely a time for me where it was, you know, and I think for a lot of players actually, because unfortunately a lot of players stop playing tennis in that, because they just couldn't see a way for it to get any better. And I mean, luckily for me, I've you know, found a bit of I felt like I could keep going, but there was definitely a period in that time where I found it really difficult. It was really lonely. Travel was so expensive, and I just couldn't see a way to be able to kind of keep on doing what I was doing. I mean, fortunately I'm here now, and I feel good, and I feel like I'm playing good. So definitely that was a moment probably for my toughest time.
It's quite relevant then that we're here at this moment, because you're playing the UK Pro League, and that is something that originated during lockdown. I wonder how much, you've spoken about British Tour, I wonder how much Pro League has benefited you, because it's something that you've, I think, performed well at across the board. We mentioned you made the final of finals week last year. And also, I believe every time that you've contested a week at Pro League, at least since beginning of 2021, you finished at the end of the week after this round robin format and everything. You finished in the top half of the rankings, generally making semis or so. So what is it about the tournament that works well for you, and how has it helped you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy the tournaments. You know, everyone's so nice. They're so lovely. And the format as well. Like, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get five matches. You're going to play within the 7 days. So I think, and you know also, you know, before the tournament who you're going to play, which is quite, you know, rare, because with an ITF you don't know who you're playing until the day before. So for example, you know, here I know who my opponent is for Wednesday on the Saturday before, which is just, it's unheard of for tennis. So I really enjoy the format, and to be honest, I mean, the UK Pro League has helped me so much. I mean, making the finals last year in Shrewsbury, I mean, before I was playing the tournament, you know, with the prize money and stuff, I genuinely was gonna have to start kind of not travel in at the start of January. I didn't have enough money in my bank account to be able to fund myself to go away and play tournaments. So I was actually, you know, gonna have to the start of the year for sure just kind of do some coaching and some hitting and do some other bits and bobs, you know, to kind of work up enough money to be able to travel again. And I mean, making the finals last year, it enabled me to be able to travel at the start of the year and get to the tournaments, which you can't thank them enough for that, you know, with the prize money and the kind of competition that they put up. So
that's great. It's given you that springboard for what has been a really good season, I feel, for mm-hmm. you as well. You're at a career high ranking in doubles inside mm-hmm. the top 200.
Yeah.
You've had singles encouragements as well. I wonder what stood out for you this year in terms of what's been really encouraging to you. What mm-hmm. have you learned a lot from as we look back at 2022?
I think at the start of the year we had a lot of events actually in the UK, which was very, very handy for us British players. I do believe there was 4 weeks in a row at Nottingham, which I don't think many people except from me was very happy about, because I could stay at home and it was brilliant. But I think for me, I mean, definitely recently I've played a lot of matches. I've had some, you know, very good results, had some promising results. And I think also, you know, playing the doubles with Ali as well, like we've had some great, I mean, as you said, you know, we've won four events this year, two at 25k level, one at 80k plus H level, and one at 60k level. And I think we've just shown ourselves, and especially for me as well, like how well we can play, and I think that, you know, we're not scared to go and beat anyone, to be honest. And I think that's definitely translated into my singles. I definitely, you know, have a lot more belief in myself, and I know that I can, you know, go on the court and, you know, I mean, say for example in Shrewsbury a few weeks ago, I was, you know, in a 6-all third set tiebreak with someone top 50 in the world. So there's nothing that it definitely has given me a lot of confidence, and I think that's definitely translated into my singles, and there's been a lot of improvements as well. So I think, yeah, playing in the higher level doubles events has definitely given me that. And I think credit to Ali as well, like she's a good gal, so we get on well and we have good banter on the court, and it just makes tennis fun as well. So it doesn't get boring, that's for sure. So I'm really happy with how the last bit part of the year has gone.
As you should be, it's a high level team. That one, the vibes are good. And I'm glad that you mentioned that match in Shrewsbury, because I did want to mention that Angelina Kalinina, she was ranked top 50, final set tiebreak you took her to, and that match was so, I'm sorry, I'm not going to mention the final result, but it was so close all the way through.
Yeah.
You've spoken here with so much belief, which I love to hear. Did you genuinely go into that match thinking that you had a good shot at getting the win?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you kind of looking at the ranking differences and you're thinking, oh, this is a bit of an ass today, you know. I know she's done very well in Grand Slams, but I genuinely think, like, before I went on the match I was like, do you know what, why not? Like, I've been playing well, I'm feeling good. I obviously, of course, like the Shrewsbury courts a lot, so
very
that helps.
Much.
You know, before the match, I was thinking, why not? And you know, I was backing myself out there to win, and you know, kind of won the first set, and I was like, okay, here we go. And then it was, yeah, lost the second set unfortunately, and then I think it was very tight in the third. I mean, as I said, I only just lost out in a 6-all breaker, but. I mean, even though it was a loss that day, I mean, I could take a lot of positives from it, and a lot, you know, for in terms of a lot to work on, and also a lot of positives with confidence and what I actually did do on the court that day. So yeah,
huge amount of positives. It was a really a performance to be proud of, and a week and a year to be proud of, really. I know that it's a little bit different kind of playing up and being the underdog compared to the ins and outs of the ITF circuit and winning those matches you should be winning. I know that you can get quite nervous. I've experienced this from watching you and commentating on you. So how do you go about combating that? What do you think needs to change in order to keep making this rankings progress and keep beating the players that you should be beating?
Yeah, I think I just need to, you know, I'd still... my coach Lucille, like, we're in contact quite a lot, and also Mark Taylor, my old coach who works for Ryan Peniston now, so I, you know, still speak to them regularly, and just I think I'm a lot better. Definitely I think I've made improvements this year on actually kind of my match IQ. So I think whether it's scouting a player beforehand or, you know, actually just figuring out how I need to play the person on the day, on the match court. So I think that's really helped me a lot. And I think it's just as well, just kind of staying in the moment and just, you know, backing yourself. And I think I'm definitely doing that a lot more this year. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I should mention that the player she beat today coming from a set down was Elise Maloney, who's been on the podcast recently and who is at a career high ranking in really good form. So that was a great win that you really managed to work hard to turn around.
Yeah.
So confidence boost there and throughout the season. But I've kept you longer than I've said, Freya. So one more question.
Go for
goals for next season, because we're at that time of year now where you're going to be thinking about things you want to achieve in 2023. What does that look like for you?
I mean, for me, I mean, the main goal is always to just stay healthy, stay fit and healthy. So gonna work, you know, after, so I've got the UK Pro League, and then I'm actually going to Dubai next week for the 100k with Ali for the doubles. So I think, so my main goal to stay fit and healthy, and then I guess second, you know, I definitely, me and Ali are going to keep on pushing for the doubles. And I mean, why not try? I mean, I guess I think we're 160 and 168 now, something like that. So definitely want to be trying to get in the top 100 next year for doubles. And then singles, I want to, you know, get myself into around a range kind of 250. So I'm making those Grand Slam qualifying. So, yeah, and also just keep on enjoying the ride. I mean, it's, I mean, I have to say that kind of the last... kind of 6 months I've been traveling with a group of girls, like, we've just happened to end up going to the same tournaments, and it's been so fun. And it's just been, you know, it's great. And I just think if I can keep on having those good times and making memories with, you know, whilst also trying to push each other to really extend and see, maximize our tennis, like, it sounds good to me. So yeah,
sounds good to me too. I think I've got a title for this podcast. It's a little phrase you've used a bit that I love. Why not?
Why not?
Especially when it's Freya Christie. And you look, Freya, you've made some great progress this year.
Thank you.
It's always great to see you and to see the progress that you're making as well. So thank you for taking the time. It's
no
always
worries.
A pleasure.
Thank
and
you.
All the best for what is next after
thank
this.
You. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Thank you to Freya for always being such a legend. I forgot to throw this bit of trivia to her, but in her final matches at the first 2 weeks of the UK Pro League last season, she finished with victories over first Alicia Barnett and then Olivia Nichols. What are the odds? And if you haven't checked out that last podcast with Liv and Liz, do go and do that now. And also go and buy UK Pro League Finals Week tickets if Nottingham is in your vicinity. Still opportunity to watch the likes of Freya and Kyle Edmund live and courtside. So do not say that I didn't inform you. And that is all for this week. As always, you can follow the podcast at tennis_in_the_UK on Instagram and at tennis_in_the_UK on Twitter. I hope you enjoyed the sound of rain on the roof, and I hope that you enjoyed listening to Freya, and I hope that you'll be back here next week. See you then.